Tonight, growing outrage over a White House staffer mocking John McCain. Sources tell NBC News she joked in a meeting, it doesn't matter what he thinks. He's dying anyway. McCain's daughter now firing back.
I don't understand what kind of environment you're working in when that would be acceptable, and then you can come to work the next day and still have a job.
Tonight, the White House refusing to apologize, confirming that staffer still has a job. Also tonight, the soaring cost of prescription drugs. President Trump promising to bring them down. New concerns about a volcano emergency in Hawaii. A national park shut down. Fears a power plant could be next. Police officers under fire, and one quits the force after video shows cops pulling a grandmother out of her car. How did a stop for a turning violation escalate so quickly? And our week-long journey across America concludes here in North Carolina with some amazing kids and a league of their own.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
A former tobacco factory, now the sprawling and vibrant center of fast-growing Durham, North Carolina. Along with nearby Raleigh and Chapel Hill, part of what's known around here as the Triangle. Good evening, everyone, and good to have you with us for the fifth and final stop of our journey across America. We're going to tell you about the stories that brought us here shortly. But first, the White House tonight is refusing to acknowledge crass and hurtful comments reportedly made by a presidential staffer about Senator John McCain that have set off a bipartisan firestorm. And now tonight, the daughter of the ailing senator and former prisoner of war is speaking out. Our Kristen Welker has details.
From the daughter of one of America's most celebrated war heroes, a powerful message for the White House after a staffer mocked her father battling brain cancer.
It is not how you die, it is how you live.
Meghan McCain speaking out on The View. This week, her dad, Senator John McCain, a POW, opposed the president's nominee for the CIA, Gina Haspel, for her failure to denounce tough interrogation tactics as immoral. Then, three sources with direct knowledge tell NBC News, Special Assistant Kelly Sadler said during a Thursday White House meeting, he's dying anyway.
I don't understand what kind of environment you're working in when that would be acceptable, and then you can come to work the next day and still have a job.
Today, the White House confirmed Sadler still has a job and then tried to ignore the controversy altogether.
I'm not going to validate a leak.
Now, a growing chorus of bipartisan criticism. Trump supporter Joni Ernst calling on the nation to treat this war hero and his family with the civility and respect they deserve. McCain's friend, Senator Lindsey Graham, saying nobody is laughing in the Senate.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is that we are normalizing behavior that we shouldn't normalize.
And former Vice President Joe Biden telling NBC News, people have wondered when decency would hit rock bottom with this administration. It happened yesterday. So is the president ultimately to blame, given his divisive rhetoric, even taking aim at McCain as a candidate?
I like people that weren't captured, okay?
Does the president set the tone? Does he bear responsibility for the tone within this White House?
He certainly does, and I think he has done a good job of laying out what the priorities of the administration are.
What has happened to civility in politics when you can't even expect the White House, the presidency of the United States, to respect a dying man, a dying American hero?
And Senator McCain's wife, Cindy, has also weighed in, tweeting to Sadler, may I remind you, my husband has a family, 7 children and 5 grandchildren. For her part, Gina Haspel said she has the utmost respect for McCain as she still faces a tough confirmation process. Lester.
All right, Kristen Welker starting us off in the White House. Thank you. While that controversy swirled inside the White House, out in the Rose Garden today, President Trump vowed to take on the soaring costs of prescription drugs, draining the wallets of so many families. But as NBC's Peter Alexander reports, the plan was light on specifics, and there are critics who say the president may have broken a big campaign promise.
President Trump tonight unveiling his prescription to bring down drug prices.
The drug lobby is making an absolute fortune at the expense of American consumers.
The president pledging to derail what he blasted as the gravy train for special interests.
This is a total ripoff, and we are ending it.
Included in the White House blueprint,
tell your doctor about all your medical conditions,
a proposed overhaul of those drug ads requiring manufacturers to disclose the cost of their medicines. Also floated banning the pharmacist gag rule, so you're told at the counter about lower cost options, offering new incentives for drug makers to slash list prices, and cutting consumers' out-of-pocket costs.
We will have tougher negotiation more competition and much lower prices at the pharmacy counter.
The Pharmaceutical Trade Association arguing some of today's proposals would limit patients' access to innovative treatments. But after the announcement, drug stocks soared. The president notably stopping well short of his past rhetoric.
The other thing we have to do is create new bidding procedures for the drug industry because they're getting away with murder.
Mr. Trump today abandoning his campaign pitch to use the government's buying power to negotiate lower prices for its programs. One consumer advocacy group complaining what Trump laid out is policy that big pharma can love.
Tasked with heading up this White House effort, the Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, who until just last year ran one of the country's largest pharmaceuticals companies. So whose side is he on? Tonight, Secretary Azar says, trust us by our actions. Lester.
All right, Peter Alexander tonight, thank you. The CEO of AT&T is telling his employees that those payments to President Trump's private attorney, Michael Cohen, were a mistake. In an internal memo, Randall Stephenson called Cohen's hiring a serious misjudgment and said that AT&T's chief lobbyist in Washington is leaving the company. Overseas, angry anti-U.S. protests broke out in Iran today as the U.S. moved to reinstate sanctions against that country. It comes amid escalating tensions between Iran and Israel, erupting in an exchange of rocket fire and missile strikes. NBC News chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel has more from the West Bank.
Defiance today in Iran as the U.S. reimposed some sanctions after President Trump walked away from the nuclear deal, burning American flags after Friday prayers, shouting death to America and issuing a new threat that unspecified preparations have begun to restart Iran's nuclear program on an industrial scale if negotiators can't salvage the deal. It comes after a rare and dangerous military confrontation between Israel and Iran. And that isn't the only flashpoint. Jerusalem is now blanketed with posters thanking President Trump for his decision to move the U.S. embassy to the city on Monday. A controversial decision that drove Palestinians onto the streets.
Palestinians say they will keep protesting right until and even after the U.S. moves its embassy to Jerusalem, and that they will never give up on their dream of having the holy city as their capital too.
Nothing in the earth can stop us from demanding freedom or oblige us to surrender to injustice.
But Israel so far has dismissed the protests as anger that will pass and says the embassy move will go forward no matter what. Richard Engel, NBC News in the West Bank.
There's been yet another shooting inside one of our nation's schools. A 15-year-old student is hospitalized with a gunshot wound to the arm after a 14-year-old former student allegedly opened fire at a high school north of Los Angeles. Police say the suspect was later captured at a shopping center. A rifle was recovered near the school. In Hawaii tonight, new concern over massive eruptions at Kilauea, where lava has already destroyed dozens of homes, with a national park now shut down and worries that a power plant could be threatened next. Officials say there's no sign the eruptions are coming to an end. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has the latest.
After fountains of lava and columns of toxic gas, Kilauea's most explosive blast could be on the horizon.
Wow.
The volcano may blow its top as the hot lava lake inside drains into cooler groundwater. A catastrophic steam explosion can launch ballistic boulders the size of cars in the air.
It's going to be raining down on people. We do not want people to get injured or have a rock fall on their head.
Tonight, concern of another catastrophe. A race to remove hazardous underground gas stored at a geothermal plant where lava is close.
This lava field stopped just short of a home over here. It's still warm. You can feel the heat coming off of it. It also cracked the earth. Here, steam is still venting.
Now the threat of the largest eruption yet. A tropical paradise forever changed. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Pahoa, Hawaii.
A Philadelphia nurse is now facing charges for the death last month of Herbert McMaster at a senior living community. McMaster was the father of former Trump National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster. The case is raising troubling questions for families with loved ones living in homes for seniors. NBC's Stephanie Gosk has details.
The death of H.R. McMaster's 84-year-old father, Herbert, at a retirement community was sudden.
Police now say it was also criminal. Kristan Ganey, a nurse at the facility, is charged with involuntary manslaughter, neglect, and records tampering.
Ganey could have saved Mr. McMaster's life had she simply done her job.
Ganey will plead not guilty to the charges, her attorney telling NBC News, Ms. Ganey is a single mother and was simply doing her job. We fully expect her to be exonerated. But police say she failed to do the required neurological checks on McMaster and released a detailed timeline of what they say happened. April 9th, Herbert R. McMaster is admitted to Cathedral Village for rehabilitation following a stroke. April 12th, at 11:30 p.m., McMaster Sr. is found on the floor of his room with a gash in his head. 6:30 a.m., a concerned nurse assistant asks about his condition. Ganey says he's okay. 7 a.m., the staff discovered he has died. But McMaster's chart indicated he was fine when checked at 7:20, 20 minutes after he had died. When asked how that could be, according to the affidavit, Ganey replied, well, I falsified that one. The healthcare facility says it is working closely with investigators, while the McMaster family wants their story to, in their words, prevent others from suffering at the hands of those who lack compassion. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, New York.
Now to our journey across America, bringing us here to our final stop in Durham, North Carolina. In the weeks after the violence that erupted in Charlottesville last August, the governor here in North Carolina proposed removing three Confederate monuments from the state capitol. It sparked a debate that has raged here for the last 9 months.
From demonstrations turning deadly in Charlottesville to right here in North Carolina, activists ripping down a Confederate monument. In the New South, old wounds haven't healed.
Ed, what do you think of when you walk by those monuments? What thoughts go through your mind?
Well, I'm a retired Army chaplain, and I think about the soldiers. They do not, in my opinion, honor white supremacy. They're monuments to the soldiers.
I think they're symbols of oppression and white supremacy, and that is part of my family history, and that I have ancestors who fought for the Confederacy, which was fighting to keep people enslaved. But I'm not proud of that.
We talked to both sides in North Carolina this morning, where there's another flashpoint. The state's historical commission now deciding if three Confederate monuments on the Capitol grounds should be removed. UNC history professor William Sturkey says they were put up during the racist Jim Crow era.
They placed them in places of prominence all over the South in order to celebrate the present that they had created, but then also to celebrate the future that they had created, which was a modern white supremacist society in the American South.
At a public meeting, most spoke in favor of keeping the monuments where they are.
Those monuments mean everything to me.
A North Carolina law severely restricts moving monuments, saying they can only be relocated to places of similar prominence. According to a 2017 poll, 59% of North Carolinians believe the monuments should remain where they are. 29% want them taken down.
To me, moving the monuments is simply a correction of the telling of history and creating a Capitol grounds that are more welcoming.
Are you sympathetic to those who are deeply offended, who see the symbolism in a different way than you do?
When I hear people say that, I ask them, let's go sit down over a cup of coffee and let's discuss this. I love to understand someone else's history. I want them to understand mine.
So here we are in 2018 in the New South. Can we ever move past this emotional controversy?
I think we can. I hope we can. I believe the monuments will come down eventually.
Ed, will we ever get past this?
I think we are beginning to get past it, and we are a long way past it.
There have to be people who have a clear vision, like John Lewis and Martin Luther King Jr., to have a vision that, yes, we can live in a society where race isn't so divisive. And of course, one of the ways that we reconcile with that truth is, I think, to remove monuments erected by white supremacists in order to invest more fully in our children's future so that they're not having the same discussions that here we are, 150 years later, still having.
The commission is expected to meet again this month before it makes its recommendation on the monuments and their future. Still ahead, outrage over dash cam video showing a police officer cursing at and forcefully arresting a grandmother, one of those officers, off the force tonight. Also, the major change Starbucks is making after those controversial arrests in Philadelphia. Back now with the outrage erupting after police officers pulled a 65-year-old grandmother out of her car, cursed at her, and arrested her during a traffic stop outside Atlanta. The incident caught on dash cam video, and tonight one of those officers has resigned. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has the story.
The 65-year-old grandmother wailing in this dash cam video had just been pulled over by police in Alpharetta, Georgia. It took six officers to take Rose Campbell into custody.
I'm so hurt.
The incident starts calmly with the first officer telling Campbell that he's stopping her because she swerved onto another lane. She refuses to sign the ticket. The encounter escalates. The third officer using strong language. As backup arrives, she's pulled out of the vehicle. Then they restrain her. That third officer, James Legg, was suspended.
Apparently lost his cool and his temper and acted inappropriately both with his words and with his actions.
Today, Legg resigned. In a letter, he writes, "I feel I acted appropriately and the way that I was trained." But he adds, "Maybe I should not have used profanity."
There's an old saying that says, "Treat others like you want to be treated." Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line.
Tonight, Campbell's pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct. As the department promises an internal investigation. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Atlanta.
Coming up, just in time for Mother's Day, the list of the year's most popular baby names is out. And billionaire Elon Musk giving a sneak peek at something he says will revolutionize the way we travel. We'll be right back. New fallout from that firestorm over the arrest of two black men at a Philadelphia Starbucks. Tonight, the company is telling all its employees to let anyone use the bathroom, even if they haven't bought anything. The move comes as Starbucks reviews its policies and does more damage control after the Philly incident went viral last month. The new list of the top baby names is out, and new parents still love little Emma and little Liam. Those names topped the list for last year, according to the Social Security Administration. Rounding out the top five on the girls' side, Olivia, Ava, Isabella, and Sophia. On the boys' side, Noah, William, James, and Logan. And is this the answer to our traffic nightmares? Billionaire Elon Musk posted video of the first tunnel being dug under L.A. as part of his proposed loop transportation system, which would transport cars, cyclists, and pedestrians at speeds of more than 120 miles an hour. Musk says this nearly three-mile section is almost done, and he plans to offer free rides to the public soon. When we come back, the young baseball players in a league of their own here in Durham. Aspiring America is next. Finally, tonight we've hustled across the street because it's college game night here in Durham, but this is actually the home of the Durham Bulls, made famous in that 1988 Hollywood film. But there are some other ball fields in this area earning their own notoriety for making the sport accessible to kids who might otherwise have to watch from the sidelines.
Here, take my hat. Here comes Lily.
This might be the best play at the plate you'll ever see.
I like to be on a team because it just feels good.
I like running the bases, hitting the ball, and playing on the outfield.
The Miracle League gives everyone an opportunity to experience the joy of the game. Like 7-year-old twins, Grayson and Leland Thompson, who both have autism.
Yay, Grayson!
Their mom, Kara, drives an hour every Saturday so they can play for the Grasshoppers.
They can come here and they can be completely themselves, and they're accepted for who they are. Nobody's judging them.
Instead, they're celebrated and supported.
She's gonna be safe at the plate.
Each kid is paired up with a buddy, and the games are played on a rubberized field for kids in wheelchairs. Nationwide, there are 300 Miracle Leagues. In Raleigh alone, there are 38 teams, more than 500 players, and 1,000 volunteers. Demand so high, they've raised $1.5 million to build a third state-of-the-art field in Durham. Benji Capps first got involved more than a decade ago when he signed up his son Micah, who has cerebral palsy. He was skeptical at first.
Played baseball my whole life. I didn't really see how this was going to be any fun.
He now runs the league.
The smiles on their face and the joy that they have, that's our goal. We just want to make sure our players have a great time.
Game day is the highlight of Kellington Morrissey's week. He says when he's playing, he's focused on just one thing.
It's making my family proud.
Aww, and you do make us proud.
And that's what the Miracle League is all about.
One of the many great stories here in the Triangle. Well, that's going to wrap up our week on the road. It has been a tremendous week meeting people all across the country. I want to say a big thanks to the folks here in Durham and the Triangle for coming out, to our affiliate WRAL for their support and a great welcome. I'm Lester Holt for all of us. That's NBC News. Have a good night and so long. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Thanks for coming out.